Live event coverage on RadioSt.Pete.com from the Station House in downtown St. Petersburg. It's the Et Kultura Festival, Future City, Transportation Transformation in the Sunshine City. Let's go to the
Today's
podium.
Discussion is possible because of OPEN, the Open Partnership Education Network, building a smarter, more connected city together. OPEN has partnered with Et Kultura to curate and launch four themes throughout the interactive branch of this year's festival that represents a starting point, a dialogue that is to last throughout the year. The Future Cities theme is powered by Duke Energy. Several sub-themes have been explored within the Future City theme, and today's sub-theme is transportation transformation. Public transit, personal mobility, autonomous, shared, electric vehicles are top common topics. Cities around the world are rethinking what streets are and who are they for, people and or cars. More transportation choices, less parking, fresh innovation, and moving people and new things are even coming. What does that look like for St. Pete? And in fact, transportation is one of the biggest challenges and economic challenges that the Tampa Bay area faces. I would like to invite you to join me with this talk and area leaders envisioning a smarter transportation system that creates a healthy, connected communities and streets that support active living and equal opportunities for all citizens. Today we have a group of distinguished panelists with us. I would like to introduce to you our moderator to guide us through this session, Alan Delisle.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, everybody. I thought maybe I'd ask everybody to give a little speech on how they got here. But I won't do that. I'm really excited about today because we got some really smart people up here to talk to you about transportation issues. But we've got a really, really smart person that has joined us with tremendous experience in all levels of government, all kinds of transportation issues that he has seen over the years. And I want him to say a few words to get us going. We're really privileged to have our congressman here today, Congressman Chris.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning. I'm honored to be here. I can't tell you how privileged I feel to represent St. Petersburg, Clearwater, St. Pete Beach in Washington, especially now. And when it comes to this issue, transportation, when I got elected and was thinking about what are we going to start out addressing, and, you know, we're in sort of a divided time, if you will, in politics in America right now, it struck me that probably the most obvious first issue to strike out upon, where there's probably very little controversy at all, is infrastructure. And, of course, that didn't happen. But don't you agree? I mean, I don't know. If I were the president, I would have said, look, let's get together. Let's address infrastructure. Everybody in the country knows that we have a problem. We need to address it. It's not a Republican or a Democratic issue. It's an American issue. And certainly it's an issue here in Tampa Bay. But, you know, they went after Obamacare. And so, you know, it is what it is. But I'm so proud of Pinellas County. In the vote that just took place here locally recently, Penny for Pinellas just went through the roof. Joni, wasn't it over 80% or something? You know, it's just amazing. And it just warms my heart to represent an area that is that progressive and that forward-thinking and gets it. So I think we're very blessed to live where we live and to be in a place where people are so enlightened and so warm and so caring and so supportive of one another, regardless of anything, you know, like where you're from or what you look like or what you believe. It's just, it's a true honor to represent you in Washington, D.C., especially now. So I want to just say hello. Thank you for the privilege of serving you. You're going to hear from some actually really smart people now. And it's nice to be able to come by for a little bit and see you. So happy Friday and happy Thanksgiving soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman, very much. And I mean, the Congressman has, our former governor, he's seen so much and been involved in all of these transportation issues. And what we're going to be talking about today is really the new day for transportation. We've got a lot of different issues in front of us, a lot of new technology that's occurring in the transportation front. And these folks deal with transportation from every different perspective. I will say, and I'm not just saying this, but I think combined you've got, you know, some talent and perspectives here that I would put up against any panel in the country to talk about these issues. I mean, these people are at the forefront of what is going on in our country and in our county and in our city right now related to transportation. And many of them have implemented programs in the last year or 2 years and in the process of implementing new programs currently that they can talk about and you can ask them about. So the key today is for me to get to them as quickly as possible, which is what I'm going to do, for them to talk for about 5 or 7 minutes, and if you hear me cough, they're going on too long. And the key is for them to touch on these topics, give you let you understand, you know, some of the thinking that's in their brain, and then for them to touch on some of these issues, and then for us to have an open discussion for about 20 minutes, for you to be able to ask questions and carry on a dialogue about the substance of what we're hearing. So I just want to introduce the panel. First person I don't know very well. I know very well. Evan Morey is the Director of Transportation and Parking for the City of St. Pete. At the very cutting edge of issues, gets things done, keeps agendas moving. Sometimes I don't know how he does it. But Evan is going to talk about the historical overview here in St. Pete, kind of some of the progressive ideas that have been implemented, and what are some of the new ideas on the horizon. Cassandra Borchers is the head of development for the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. Cassandra is also at the cutting edge of technology and the changes that are occurring, and she's going to be talking about those new technologies from a public-private transportation perspective and how we're moving people today and in the future. So that's going to be an excellent presentation. Joni James is the head of, she is the president, CEO, executive director of the Downtown Partnership. And Joni's perspective is also very unique on this. She's very involved with the transportation systems that serve downtown and all of those connecting points. But she's also very involved in the how downtown runs and the future development of downtown. So she's got that very unique perspective. And she's going to be talking about transportation within these urban areas. And then Whit Blanton is with Forward Pinellas. Whit, you are either the president, CEO, or executive director as well. He's on top of that organization, a really forward thinker on transportation. He's got us moving in all kinds of directions and having us think about how we're connected on a regular basis and how we're moving people, and has got some regional thoughts as well. So he's going to talk about a lot of the changes that we're seeing in the transportation marketplace. So those are the four people that you have before us here. I'm going to turn it over to Evan to get things started.
All right, thank you, Alan. Is this on? Yes, all right, thank you. I'm not going to go back too far in history. I'm going to more talk about what we've been doing in recent history, and some of the other folks have some nice old pictures of history for you. But I do want to talk about some of the things we're trying to change in St. Petersburg. We are trying to be innovative, and luckily I do have a good supportive boss in Alan, as well as a very supportive mayor and council. So we try to bring things forward, and hopefully you all think that we have brought some successes forward. I'm going to highlight some of those today, and I don't have my own clicker, so I got to go through these really fast because I've got more slides than I'll really be able to go over. So this is kind of how we look at transportation in a number of bullets in St. Pete. And go ahead. We've had a lot of firsts here in St. Petersburg that we're proud of. And we were the first separated bike facility in the state of Florida, where we actually separate cars from the bicycles to try to give them protection. We're also the first to come up with the RFBs. Those are the flashing lights that you see at the crosswalks. They were invented here. We got permission to experiment from the Federal Highway Administration. And now those are all over the country helping people get across the road. So when I heard about this presentation about the streets and are they for people or are they just for cars, and my thought is they're for people. And anything that we talk about with complete streets is going to be about making sure that people can get around safely by all modes. And that's what we're concentrating on right now, is advancing complete streets. But we've really been advancing complete streets concepts for a long time. And we had the first painted intersection in the area. This kind of serves as creative traffic calming to moderate speeds, but it's also artistic. Like, we love the arts here in St. Petersburg. Fort Lauderdale kind of started with this, but we're the first one around here that's done painted intersections. Sometimes the private sector steps in and helps us with trying to help people get around by more options than just a car. These are two examples. We recruited a company from the other coast of Florida to come in and do electric car service. They didn't start here. Somebody else stepped into that, but they're in operations in Tampa right now. And we even have pedal power to get people around. This is a local provider of just hop in the back of a bike and get around like you see in the Key West area. You can see that here as well. We've been working for a long time on what we call our City Trails network. Now we have over 130 miles of dedicated bike lanes and bike trails in the city, and we're going to keep working on this and moving this forward as we come into complete streets. Complete streets, this is a picture of what complete streets is not. This picture is from Orlando, and they're going to fix this because they have a new transportation director there that's great. But it doesn't mean that you're going to fit every single mode on every street. This is where they shoehorned in a bike lane that really shouldn't be there, and we're fixing some of our bike lanes as well. Complete streets is more about giving people options, and if we can't fit a bike lane here, what can we fit? Or what can we fit two blocks away so we have a network of ways to get people around? And complete streets isn't about creating gridlock for cars, but it is for moderating speed so we have more safety, and making sure that we're going to keep working on trying to make the interstate flow better. But in a downtown environment, in an environment where you're trying to have commerce, not much commerce happens at 50 miles an hour. And so we're looking at ML King Street now, where the speed limit is 35, but everybody's going 45 plus. How can we moderate some of those speeds and help those businesses, help the residents get across the street safely? Go ahead. We resurfaced First Street over by Al Lang not too long ago, and every time we resurface, we try to look at it as a blank canvas and try to improve upon that. So we came up with a rendering of what it could look like and be better, and we made a two-way bike facility out there as well. So if you go out and look at First Street now, you'll see something more like this than what you saw in the previous picture. It's not exactly like this, but we have a nice loop, a one-mile loop around from the Pinellas Trail on First Avenue, which happens to be right outside the door here. And it goes around, and we have this connected on Bayshore behind the Mahaffey and the Dolly as well. And this slide really demonstrates why we're working on complete streets here in St. Petersburg. Now these bullets at the top, and then also it's good for the young and the old, so we have a couple of quotes here. Gone through a lot of public engagement on this, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to speak to you all today about it. It's important to get community support for complete streets. And I'll talk a little bit about parking management and some of the smart city initiatives we've had around that here lately, because we do want to make it easier for people to park, easier for people to comply with the parking regulations that we have, avoid parking tickets. And anytime that you can make the parking more efficient, you can guide people to parking, you actually reduce congestion. By reducing the congestion, we improve the safety and we reduce pollution. So some of the things we've done is we were the first city to have the Park Mobile payment app. I get more compliments on that than probably anything. People love that, and being able to renew your parking. We were the 10th city in the country to do it. Now Park Mobile's all over the place. You can use the same program in Tampa, Clearwater, St. Pete Beach. We're also the first city in the area to use the single space credit card meters, where you don't have to walk down to a kiosk and remember your space number or put something on your dash. And something I'm really excited about is we're going to be the first city in the area to have guided parking. And if you flip to the next, we're going to have a system put in place within 6 months that you can use your smartphone or you can go on a website and you'll see where we have parking in real time. You'll see how much it costs. You'll see the on-street, you'll see the off-street, so you know all your options, and that's going to help people not have to circle around for parking. It's going to help try to get people in the garages, which, by the way, we implemented a first-hour free program in the garages to try to get people just go ahead and park in a garage, don't drive around and try to find that rock star space, as some people put it, right in front of your destination every single time. So this is coming. It's a smart city initiative that's going to be great, and even greater is we got this for free. Go ahead, next slide. I'll skip this one. Next slide. Our parking study suggested that we have enough parking in downtown, but it's not spread out well enough, and people have a hard time finding it. It's one reason why we're doing the guided parking. And the study suggested that we do look at building more parking within or around these three areas. But what we're doing is we're going to form public-private partnerships, and we're going to build small amounts of parking. We're not going to build 1,000 space garages anymore like what we built, because we don't think that we need 1,000 space garages. We don't need to concentrate them together so much, because we think that parking demand is going to increase for a little while. We think we really need some off-street parking in the Edge District, but we don't think that parking is going to be 20 years from now what it is today, based on some of the things that other folks are going to talk about. We're also looking at trying to build parking garages that can be repurposed. So you just build them with higher ceilings, or you build them so that you can build something on top of it in the future. Go ahead. Next slide. I'm going to let Cassandra talk about the grid plan, but how many people like Williams Park now compared to how it was a few years ago? It's great, isn't it? So in freeing up Williams Park, we also got this great bus grid system. We got two things out of it, and that was free, essentially free. Next slide. We're also going to revamp the downtown looper. We're going to have double the service hours. We're going to go into the evening, and this is something that Joni's group is working with, another public-private partnership, or partnership between the city, PSTA, the partnership, and Ford Pinellas is helping with this as all. Next slide, please. BRT's coming, and we'll just flip through these slides, and if Joni wants to talk about BRT some more, this is a great project that's coming forward soon. Bike share, hope everybody's gotten a chance to use bike share, or at least seen somebody on bike share. Alan works downtown, lives downtown. He tells me they're everywhere. Sees them all the time, and I do too. This is a public-private partnership where the city bought the infrastructure, and we have the private sector step in, and they are guaranteeing all the operating costs, so this doesn't cost the city anything on an ongoing basis. Go ahead and flip the slide, please. And some folks thought, nobody's going to ride this, or it's only for tourists, but we measured a certain month, and while we had 41 states covered, we actually had 65% of the trips were by St. Pete residents. And so we're finding that this is a way that locals can get around without having to use their car, and it's not just for tourists. And we've had 70,000 miles traveled already, so people are definitely using it. We have the GPS on every single bike. This is a heat map that shows coverage for a few months put together. And you can see it's also not just about downtown. Some folks said it's just about downtown, and although the concentration is downtown and north, people are going all over the city on these bikes, even though they're not intended for long trips. Go ahead. I'm not going to talk too much about the ferry, but this was a great partnership. This was a demonstration where four government entities got together and improved transportation. And it's unprecedented how those groups got together, and so we were glad to be able to pull this off. We tracked a lot of statistics with this that you can just kind of roll through, keep going through those. And the reason why we tracked those statistics was to learn, and also so we could apply for grants. Luckily, we have a $400,000 plus grant that's coming from FDOT, so we're going to bring back the ferry next year in conjunction with opening up the new pier. Keep going. We measured economic benefits, and if you're a restaurant owner on one side of this, you're lucky, because 71% of the people that rode the ferry dined out while we were here. We looked at induced trips versus replacement trips. I don't really have time to go into it. Keep going. We're bringing a new wayfinding for vehicles so people can efficiently get to their destination. This is for visitors. And then we're not forgetting the pedestrians. Go ahead. We're going to introduce new pedestrian wayfinding downtown so that you feel better about getting around on foot and not on car. Go ahead. And we really are trying to concentrate a lot on walkability. And we hope that you all see that. And these are some of the ways that we're doing it. Final slide. And this is my final slide. I like to put up accolades that the city's received for various things. And these aren't all transportation related. And there is a mistake on here because this says we were ranked number third most walkable neighborhood in the state. That's last year's. Now we're number one for downtown St. Pete. Yeah. And one thing that's interesting about the walkability is they're not just measuring how wide our sidewalks are, or all the bulb outs we put in, or the pedestrian countdown, or the flashing beacons. They're also looking at the land use, and they're looking at if somebody lives in downtown, can they walk to get their groceries? So thank you, Publix, for opening up a second grocery store. And what can you live here kind of car-free in our downtown? And the answer is you can, or you can reduce that. And so my department, being in charge of transportation and parking, we try to make parking easier, but what we're really trying to do is make it so you don't feel like you have to drive your car, and you can get around in other ways, whether it be on foot, bike, or in one of Cassandra's vehicles. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Cassandra Borchers. I'm the Chief Development Officer at the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority, and I am excited to talk to you about how we are going to change the way that people travel and how PSTA is preparing for that. When we think about the environment that we're working in right now, we are in an astronomical time for technology and how we accept that technology into our transportation systems. We're also dealing with a time that has very high expectations from our customer, and that includes people who are using our system now and people who will use our system in the future. So whenever we think about what we're doing at PSTA, we want to think about what is our core mission. And our core mission is still to get people to where they want to go. How we do that is going to be different in the future. It's going to be different in 5 years. It's going to be different in 20 years. It's going to be really different in 50 years. But we, keeping that in mind, we think about what our new playbook is. So keeping our eye on the horizon. We need to think of ourselves no longer as a bus company, but as the manager of mobility options. We want to make sure that we're partnering with innovative cities like the city of St. Petersburg, but also new tech companies and what they're bringing to the table. And that's where all of these things, the technology advancements, innovative partnerships, and thinking of ourselves as a mobility manager, all of these things are part of our new playbook. They're all intertwined, and they very much relate to each other. And we need to think of ourselves as a system. We are no longer one thing, no longer the bus company. This right now includes, can you help me with this? Yeah, let me help you with that. How we communicate with people and creating a complete trip solution. So we're looking at how we integrate modes and we integrate the payments of those modes. And this is something that's happening nationally. There are new programs with the Federal Transit Administration, different agencies across the country that are looking at how we have, you can take the bus to the ferry, then you get on bike share, and how that all works together and how we communicate that to people. That will take partnerships with companies like Uber and Lyft, United Taxi, and Megabus. You know, the innovative agencies across the country are using the capacity of private sector transportation options in order to make the most of the system that we have today. The next thing is the technology and how we're going to accept this technology into our system. Again, thinking about our customer. there are already autonomous elements to the cars that you buy today, and they are being tested for level 5 autonomy in places like Contra Costa County in California. Some of these are if you look up the GoMentum Ranch, it's an amazing opportunity for us to look at autonomous vehicles and how they will operate in our space. But that's not just for us as individuals, it's for us as the collective, as us as high capacity vehicles as well. These are happening in Minneapolis. You'll see for the Super Bowl, they're trying to unveil a system of autonomous vehicles in Minneapolis and look at how those autonomous vehicles will operate in cold weather conditions. Tampa just unveiled this week their autonomous vehicle, which will run on Marion Street, again, hoping to have it there for the tournament. The future of the way that we look at our transportation is you will no longer just have the opportunity to own a car or just take the bus. It is quite possible that we will start to look at our transportation like we look at cable, like we look at Netflix. It is a subscription service to mobility, and you get to choose what pieces of that mobility that you will occupy. So you may have a plan that you pay for that has so many miles on Uber, so many miles on the bus, so many miles of bike share, and you get to choose every single day what you're going to do and how are you going to make that trip. If you take nothing away from this whole entire presentation, except for this, then you will have learned what the future is going to be like. It is going to be automated, it is going to be connected, it is going to be electric, and it is going to be shared. And how PSTA is preparing for that, we have already started in a lot of these spaces, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the projects that we're working on that you will see in the next probably 12 to 36 months. We are definitely taking a holistic approach to how we put these things together and thinking about what is the problem that we are trying to solve. We are not trying to showcase technology. We are trying to solve the problems of the community first and see how we can use the technology to solve that. The first is our paratransit, late shift, and direct connect programs. And these are our partnerships with Uber, United Taxi, and a wheelchair company. We are the first in the nation to subsidize rides using Uber. What we did for this program in our Direct Connect, you can take an Uber ride anywhere in Pinellas County to 8 stops around the county, get on the bus. We will pay the first $5 of that ride. What we want to do is make sure it's easy for people to get to the core system that we have. This is about making our system work better so we're not running unproductive routes. We're getting to people to the best route so we can run 10-minute service on our key routes if we can get people to it easier. The other is our TD late shift. That's an equity issue. A lot of these programs, a lot of the technologies will have social implications, and we're trying to solve those up front by getting people to their jobs, especially in a place like Pinellas County, where our economy is based on tourism and people have second and third shift jobs and our buses don't necessarily run at the times that they need to get home from work or to work if they go very early in the morning. So our TD late shift program does that, gives them free Uber rides to or from their workplace. They have a cap for the number of one they can use for the month, again, designed to get people to work. And you'll see shortly our paratransit service for our persons who need extra assistance in using our transportation system, an on-demand service, and we'll be using Lyft and United Taxi to do that. So I'm just going to skip through these because I know I'm going to run out of time. But I want to make sure that that everybody here understands that we are making our investments carefully to plan for the evolution of what this transformational world is going to look like. We are working on the Central Avenue BRT project, which will connect, Bus Rapid Transit project. I'm trying to talk fast, not getting out of them. We are looking at rapid service from downtown to the beaches, and this would be 17 stations. It'd be a 35-minute trip using 60-foot articulated bus vehicles. I mean, our normal buses are about 40 feet. having it be a much faster service, using semi-exclusive lanes, but also vehicles that can talk to the signal. So we're looking at how are we going to be able to move these buses faster so that you will want to choose this option of using the bus because it will be faster than driving. We're also looking at electric vehicle pilot. We have on order 2 electric vehicles that will be running on the circulator system that Evan showed. This is our test field for this electric technology. We would like to deploy them other places in the county, but we want to see how this technology works today and what kind of hotel loads we can carry with the electric technology. And as it advances, we could put it on other places in our system. You'll see those on the road in October of 2018. We are also working on an integrated app, working right now with a company called Transit App, and you can download it today. If you look at your trip, let's say from here at the station house down to Johns Hopkins, you'll see that you have multiple buses, and this app will also give you the time it takes to ride a bike, the time it takes to walk, and the time it takes to get an Uber. We'd like to get the ferry on here and also make sure that you can use this to not only choose your trip, but then pay for your trip. So if your trip includes a bus and then bike share, you reserve your bike from the moment you get on the bus, or if you think you're going to take the ferry, you're buying your ferry ticket along with your bus pass. We're also working on an autonomous vehicle pilot. We've been working with a company called Easy Mile, and we have several engineering firms that have been coming to us to ask if they could help us put this together. And so I'm not going to make any promises about where it is in the county yet, but we are looking at a number of places around the county, and whoever comes up with the charging stations first gets to go first. In the end, we don't always know what the future is going to look like or when the future is going to be here. But I want to let you know that Pinellas County and PSTA are not only watching what's happening, but we are at the forefront of some of these technologies, and we will be ready.
So I'm going to take a different tact. I am not educated in transportation, except that these fine people let me work with them and have taught me a lot. So I come to this from a pretty different perspective, sort of more of a community perspective and a more global perspective. And I want to sort of recreate for you a moment where I finally got this about 2 years ago. I was at a conference, the International Downtown Association, and Tony Seba, who was a professor at Stanford University, he now has his own sort of think tank that I encourage you to look up his stuff. I've got it on one of these slides. Put this picture up. This is 1900 Times Square, New York City. There is one car, the rest are buggies. My next slide, don't do it yet, my next slide is when the inverse of that is true. How long do y'all think it took? Somebody guess. 10 years? 20? We could do it. It took 13, okay? So think about, that was pretty darn quick. You know, roughly after the Industrial Revolution, that you had this extraordinary transformation of transportation. Guys, we're going at light speed compared to that. So think about how quickly this is coming. Everything you think, you know, I was actually driving up US 19 earlier this morning, and I saw that Crown Automotive is building a new auto dealership, Castle. And I thought to myself, hope it's retrofitted for electric cars. And then I thought to myself, I actually hope it's retrofitted to be a wholesaler of electric cars to services that actually you are going to start buying your mobility subscription from. Because I just want you to think about, take the next slide. So Tony Seba predicts, and that's his think tank, is he predicts within 10 years of autonomous vehicles sort of gaining total acceptance, it's over. I actually think we probably are already at the start of that 10-year window, okay? Think about how much money that's going to save the average American. And once you create a financial incentive, the transition comes even faster. So some people have said, so think about how disruptive this is. Think about how much of your life right now revolves around, I have a fixed asset car that I park at my house that is empty 95% of the time and isn't moving, and I'm paying insurance, and I'm paying gasoline, and I'm stopping at the corner gasoline station, and I'm paying my local insurance agent to insure me? Think about how disruptive this is going to be. The other point he makes is that these cars will very quickly become probably solar operated. So think about that. So let's go to the next slide. So first, you're going to immediately impact individual incomes and what that's going to mean for consumer consumption. Now, of course, immediately I think, is that going to, you know, the free market may very quickly stagnate wages for a while, right? Because you don't need as much money to get to work, so we're not going to pay you quite as much. So that there's always that piece. But you've also got, I'm sorry, I can't really, what's the next one? Fewer car, the, think about how it's going to revolutionize. I mean, there's a reason, it's Google. The next cars may not come from Ford or Chevy. They may very well come from Google, and maybe Toyota makes part of it, but it's really Google, and they don't cost as much, because if it's a smart car and it's autonomous, you don't have to put as much protection devices in it, because guess what? It's not going to have, it's not as fallible as us humans are, right? So that's going to change. Think how that will change the insurance market. Think how that's going to change the entire energy industry in the U.S. and the world. So he's got a stat up there about how much our demand within that 10-year window is going to go down. Think about what that means for all kinds of global things. So we really are on the precipice here of things that are going to radically change quickly. Your corner gas station may not be needed. Do they become comfort stations instead, right? Do you basically, what happens to them? Your personal garage, you suddenly just gained 600 square feet of new space. You can rent to someone. You can start your little side business. Think about how that wealth creation is part of. Parking garages in downtown, shared spaces. What we still don't know is which technology will be the leader. Is it going to be connect cars that talk to each other constantly? Is it going to be cars that talk to stations on the side of the street? We don't know all that. We just know it's coming. And also, if you look at part of what Tony Seba talks about why he thinks this is coming so quickly, is that the adoption rate for Uber and Lyft exceeded everyone's expectations. Who in here's taken a car sharing ride this month? Who has thought about getting rid of their car? Right. So think about also this, it also increases mobility options for the elderly. You know, so if you create a car sharing, as our car sharing system becomes more robust, buses sort of start looking more like train lines, perhaps, instead of you know, specific routes. You're taking a smaller vehicle to get to the mainline routes. The mobility for our elderly population grows. The mobility grows for young people. It's a game changer, and you know, we really owe. Florida is also at the forefront of this, and it's largely due to our local state senator Jeff Brandis, who since 2011. Has put Florida at the forefront of adopting laws that make it conducive for the automated industry to play here, I guess, you know, to sort of do test. So I think that's fascinating in and of itself, and it's also a reason I think St. Petersburg, particularly with our grid system, we're also perfectly, I mean, we're about as well situated as a older city can be to adopt this new technology. And then I just want to mention a few other things. I mean, 2011, they had their first connected vehicle test in Florida on I-4. So think about, this has already been happening in the state for 6 years. Kennedy Space Center is actually starting now to become a testing ground for some autonomous vehicle technology. Just south of here, have y'all heard of Babcock Ranch in southwest Florida? They are planning, when they open their new planned community, that there will be autonomous taxis for the residents, as well as some individual cars. Florida Polytechnic in Lakeland University, that was recently created, it's been playing in this space a lot. And then GM Manufacturing just announced that it was going to start deploying automated taxis, is going to do a test of automated taxis in Manhattan. How challenging of an environment is that, right? So I think my purpose here today is to think about how much is going to change. Ella, in the one thing Tony Siva said 2 years ago, there was a parking garage being built in Los Angeles. And by that point, ride sharing had already so fundamentally changed the commuting patterns of the people in the neighborhood where that parking garage was going in, that the developer never finished it and instead pivoted it and turned it into lofts, apartments. So just think about, you know, there's still a lot of things to figure out, but how this will change the design of buildings so that you have plenty of room for people to drop off and pick up, how this will, just if we don't have parking as an issue, think about how much more real estate we have. So.
That's a great introduction to some of the things I wanted to talk about. As the executive director of Forward Pinellas, we're the countywide land use and transportation planning agency, so we really get to look at both angles. And, you know, we have to put both those things together. So if you have a clicker to advance, there we go. I've got a few slides here. I want to step up and talk a little bit about countywide and regional transportation and land use decision making, because that's really fundamental to how we spend our dollars. And we're at this cusp of change right now where it takes so long to get a transportation investment that we have literally billions of dollars in the pipeline to build last decade's transportation investments. And unfortunately, many of those are still going to go forward, but they're going to help for a period of time. But if you look at Pinellas County and the footprint of transportation asphalt that we have out on our roadway network, we have way too many thoroughfares and not nearly enough community in our county. And yet we have the geography to have a tremendous community. So I just want to talk a little bit about, let's see, how do we advance this? Maybe it's the wrong one. Well, I have no idea how to advance the slide. There we go. All right, so let's start by how we're re-envisioning Pinellas County a little bit. We put together a working vision map that you see up here, and we started to think, well, what's unique about Pinellas County? And it's the fact that we have a geography that has 24 different cities. We have a lot of small town connected neighborhoods. You have a bunch of them in St. Petersburg. They're not all cities. Indian Rocks Road at West Bay Drive is a good example of one of these walkable districts that we have. I live near Safety Harbor. We have Dunedin. We have Tarpon. We have Gulfport. We have all these places. And if you think about what makes Pinellas County work, it's the idea that we have many 20-minute neighborhoods and many potential 20-minute neighborhoods. And what is a 20-minute neighborhood? It's a place that you can go to get most of your day-to-day activities accomplished within a 20-minute travel time, whether you're on foot, in a bike, or in a car, and or in a transit vehicle of some kind, right? And so if you look at what this looks like from a mapping standpoint and that travel shed, there's a lot of overlap. So if you're in the countryside area, you can get to downtown Dunedin in less than 20 minutes, you can get to Safety Harbor in 20 minutes, you can get to parts of Clearwater in 20 minutes. And what we have to think about is, again, I don't know how this works. There we go. Got to push it hard. Overlaying that of how we connect our cities and our region throughout the area. So we're focusing on how do we make Pinellas County and Tampa Bay as a region the most accessible county and the most accessible region in Florida and maybe in the southeast. And I think we've got the geography to get there. One of the challenges that we have to overcome is the cost of housing and transportation that we deal with today. And how much do you think, what percentage of the average household income in Tampa Bay is spent on housing and transportation? Anybody want to guess? 30, 45, 50, keep going. We're above 60%, and that's among the highest in the nation when you combine housing cost and transportation cost. That leaves little room for investing, little room for your kids, little room for vacations, and that's way too high. We need to bring that south of 50% to be in the right area, really ideally about 40 to 45%. And so if you think about who we are, we're people, and we're always going to need to walk. We're always going to need to have
places that we can get to on foot. And we need to rethink and repurpose some of that infrastructure that we have in Pinellas County. We have a lot of roads where we have the capacity for 45, 60,000 vehicles a day, and yet the cars that are out there on some of these roads are 25, 30, 40,000. So we need to look at, with connected and autonomous vehicle technology, can we reduce our travel lane widths from 12, 13, 14 feet down to 10, 11 feet in a lot of cases? What will that do? It'll do two things. One, it'll provide space for room for buffered or protected bike lanes. It'll provide space for wider sidewalks. It'll provide space for better landscaping. Have any of you all been down West Bay or East Bay Drive lately or Ulmerton Road? You can land an aircraft carrier or a B-52 on one of those roadways. It'll also provide for slower vehicle speeds. If you can get a 10 or 11 foot travel lane, you can have cars that actually don't go 65 miles an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone. So those are a couple things we really want to focus on. And really looking at what are the strategic investments we need to make in Pinellas County and our region to facilitate that happening. All right, we're going to keep pushing until, there we go. So one of the things that we're working on is what's called the Tampa Bay Regional Transit Plan. And for the first time in a long, long time, we have the Florida Department of Transportation stepping up to assist the metropolitan planning organizations like Ford Pinellas and over in Hillsboro and the counties to make smart investments in public transportation. And we've got good transportation networks in each county, but we have a terrible situation of connecting our region. And we are one region. People commute across the bay all the time for events, for education, and for work. And we need to start acting like we're one region. So the Department of Transportation and its many partners, including us, are helping to make that happen by really figuring out where we make our first regional investment in public transportation. And we have an opportunity with the Howard Franklin Bridge. The DOT is going to be putting in some toll lanes that can be doubled for use as regional express bus, and maybe at some point that'll hold a light rail or some other kind of fixed guideway transportation investment. But what you see here on this map is the system plan in dark blue, and that's the vision for how we become connected. And that dark blue line connects Wesley Chapel, downtown Tampa, West Shore, the Gateway area where we are starting a master plan for about a 30 square mile area to transform the Gateway into a series of walkable, scalable districts where we can have new investment, we can have new jobs, and we can have good transit connections, which are sorely lacking today. And the folks who live in apartments in the Gateway now, many of our younger workers coming out of college, they want to ride their bikes. What do they have to do? They have to put the bikes on the back of a car and drive somewhere to go ride the bike. We need to change that so that the Gateway is a better connected community and not just a drive-to workforce destination. So this really touches on our major employment centers and the places that we need to go as a region. So the next step in this is to figure out how do we fund it? How do we repurpose some of those transportation dollars that are in our pipeline? How do we use, whether it's penny for Pinellas money or whether it's sales tax money or county revenues to advance that? And I talked earlier about repurposing some of our roadways. This is an example of some complete streets that have been resurfaced and changed. And the penny for Pinellas that the congressman mentioned earlier that passed overwhelmingly, we have a pocket, a bucket of money for what we call 3R projects, resurfacing and rehabilitation of our roadways. And that gives us a great opportunity to, as we resurface our streets, as we look at maybe having narrower lane widths, as we look at connected and autonomous vehicles, really put in the right infrastructure to build our economic wealth, to build wealth for people and add value to our communities by providing greater accessibility. So the future is ours. We have a lot of opportunity to do it. St. Pete is the leader in our county, but we also have great places like Dunedin and Tarpon and Safety Harbor that have done these things as well. And we need to build on that and expand that not only countywide, but throughout the region. Thank you.
Wow, right? A lot of information. Everybody relax, take a deep breath. That was a lot of great quality information about transportation and where we're headed, I have one. I'm gonna open this up for questions, right? So start. Hopefully, you got some questions from all of this that popped in your mind. But I have to admit one thing. One thing I don't like, right, is my wife and I, we did downsize. We had two cars, and we decided to downsize to one, so we're right in sync with the trends. Guess who won that battle? Guess who lost their sports car?
you had the same thing happen? Wow, that's great. All right, so you've got some great minds here. You've heard some great trends that are occurring. So I'm just going to open it up now to any questions or comments that people want to make. I mean, if you've got experiences that you'd like to talk about, that is fair too. So this gentleman was first, and then I'll come back to this lady here. Guys, get your mics ready. Get ready to answer.
Hi, thanks. I came a little late. I apologize. Did you guys talk about the Howard Franklin Bridge? If you did, can we get a recap? And if you didn't, could you please explain it to me? It's really confusing, and the pay thing. And so my question is, can you talk about it? Number two, is this really the plan that's moving forward? And is there still any open discussion about it?
Yeah, I'll be
great question, Whit.
Yep. We had a public hearing last night in the Gateway area over at Carillon on the Howard Franklin Bridge. The DOT is needing to replace the northbound span of the bridge. It's past its useful life. So that's going to get demolished. DOT is going to build a new span of the bridge on the north of where the existing bridge is today. And what is the southbound direction will become the northbound direction, and the new bridge will become the southbound direction. They're building into that, in each direction, two managed lanes, what are called variable priced toll lanes. And the idea is that the pricing will change based on the level of congestion on the roadway to maintain an average speed of about 45 miles an hour. And the deal is that the federal government and DOT in our state are really focused on travel time reliability, and having a predictable travel time throughout our region. They're not only looking at the Howard Franklin Bridge, they're looking at I-75 and I-4 for those kinds of treatments as well. And it's not that you would use those managed lanes necessarily every day, but when you had a need to get somewhere, like I do, because I always cut it really close, in 20 or 25 minutes, and you gotta be there in 20 or 25 minutes, it gives you that option to pay more to have that premium. The nice thing about this, as opposed to, say, the plan 3 months ago, is that instead of waiting to build yet a third bridge to have light rail or something like that, they're building the bridge to be ready to have light rail if our counties make the decision to fund the ongoing operations and maintenance of light rail. Because DOT will help pay for a significant part of the capital cost, but they won't pay for the operating cost. So we have to come up with a way to do that. But they're going to harden one of the new spans to accommodate the light rail. But in the meantime, they've said, and we've got to work on the funding a little bit, but they've said that we can use those managed lanes to run regional express or bus rapid transit type vehicles, and that is a much lower cost than building a new light rail line. And what that does on either end, in Tampa, it could connect to the streetcar. In St. Petersburg, it would connect with the bus rapid transit line going down First Avenue north and south. And then we can build off that system. So that initial investment is a real big part of the Howard Franklin. In addition, they're putting in a 15-foot wide bike path across the Howard Franklin as part of the construction. And, you know, there are people who commute across the Gandy Bridge, across the State Road 60, on the Courtney Campbell Causeway Trail. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for that Howard Franklin Trail to carry commuters as well as folks getting recreation and public health.
Thank you. Second question?
Hi, I'm originally from Los Angeles, so I come from the land of cars. But when I moved here 10 years ago, I lost my car and I never got another one. So I have been using the public transit system and walking, and it's always worked. But one of my problems with the PSTA system has always been the routing systems. Do you plan to improve the routing systems, or do you guys actually go out there and ride the ride when you do the routes, because the routes suck. I'm sorry. And for somebody who rides the bus every single day, it's a real source of frustration when it takes you 2 hours one way to get somewhere. And you're on a bus with 8 million people that are screaming and yelling, and basically it's just a nightmare sometimes to even just take the bus in general. And I've been to many of the meetings in the past, and I really felt like you guys have just not listened to the people that have the public when I've been to the meetings with many other people. And that's been the general consensus amongst the citizens that have gone there. Is there going to be changes in that respect?
So we look at
Sandra,
our routes.
Sandra, I think this one is yours.
I think this is mine. So we look at our routes 3 times a year and we make changes. So we look at the running times, we look at the load factors, we look at whether we're going to extend routes or split routes. We did make some changes over the last year to increase some efficiencies in the system. So it, sometimes when you make a change, it doesn't work for everybody, but we're trying to make it work for the most people. I would say the biggest issue that we have with our bus system right now is how incredibly underfunded it is. When you look at cities like Los Angeles, which has billions of dollars that they are putting towards public transportation, they can have 10-minute service, 5-minute service, in places like New York, 3-minute service. When we are spending less than $60 per capita on public transportation, what we get is 30-minute service and 60-minute service, and that is unacceptable. Places like Seattle spend $300 per capita on their public transportation system. This is the kinds of things that we need to talk about. We want to give better service. We want to be more efficient. We want to make sure that our underproductive routes are being taken by other technologies that we could probably use that are less expensive, so that we can put service into our core network. Because if we don't get our core network right, we will lose the opportunity to have your ride. I agree with you. The public transportation system in this county is dismal. The amount of service that we're able to put out on the road is unacceptable for people when they have to choose, when they choose to use it and they choose not to use it. So in order for us to have better service, we either need to fund it properly as a community, or we need to say, you know, in those places like St. Petersburg where we do get high ridership, we do have high ridership routes, maybe we should put more service on those routes and not have service in other areas, because those are our choices right now.
Thanks, Cassandra. Next question.
Could you please describe the plan for pedestrians in the Pier area and the Central Avenue area and the connectivity to regional transportation?
Evan, you want to jump in on that one?
Sure. I can talk about that a little bit. We have pretty extensive plans for the new pier, and we've coordinated with Cassandra's group on trying to make the pedestrian connections with the transit connections, as well as Joni. We have a place picked out for where the circulator will stop closest to the pier. We have a place picked out for where the Central Avenue trolley will stop very close to the pier, and it's basically right at the intersection of Bayshore and 2nd Avenue. We're not going to have the large vehicles come out onto the pier approach, but we're going to introduce a new tram system, one like you have not seen before at the pier, and where these public transportation vehicles stop is going to be a stone's throw away from the tram stop that's going to be at the base of the pier. But maybe more importantly, we're really concentrating on activating the whole pier from Bayshore to the end. And that was kind of a problem with the old pier, was there was not much to do except for getting all the way out to the end. Now that we're going to have $20 million to invest in the uplands portion, you're going to be activated and interested from the beginning with the marketplace and other things. So you're going to enjoy that walk, so you might not even get on the tram. So there's designated vehicular routes less the buses, less the trolleys, so that makes it a little bit more pedestrian friendly. There's going to be sidewalks, there's going to be multiple routes, there's going to be bikes can travel where the cars do, or the bikes can travel in with the pedestrians, because we're going to make the sidewalks so large. So if I had a map that I don't have with me, I could show you a little bit better, but that's very well thought through, and I think we have a good plan for that. And on Central Avenue, I don't think we have a whole lot more that we can do. We've already done a lot for pedestrians between the pedestrian countdown signals. We have the bulb outs at almost every intersection, at least in the core we do, and that shortens the travel distances. It also slows down the traffic. I'm up for suggestions on how to make downtown more pedestrian friendly. That was actually what going to be, we were supposed to come up with questions for the audience, so that was going to be my question if I get that chance.
Well, and
later.
And Evan, if I could take a second, I just want to tell this group, you may not be aware, but the city and PSTA and the Downtown Partnership have been working on what I'm calling Looper 2.0. So what is currently very much a tourist-oriented trolley that goes through downtown St. Pete is going to be shifting to more of a traditional type downtown circulator. Its hours are going to double. It will hopefully be free. And it's going to go from the Vinoy down all the way to Johns Hopkins and sort of everywhere in between. It'll go as far west as 5th Street. And so I think it's going to help a lot of downtown residents or downtown users, either if they're coming in off a bus to get through downtown or just to move through downtown. And that will hopefully, we're aiming for October, and there will be two trolleys and an electric bus on that route. So
next question. And a lot of hands going up here, so questions quick, answers quick.
Could you speak to 175 and 375 and how they have, I think it's obvious the impacts that their creation and 275 created in dividing St. Pete and downtown St. Pete. And I mean, the highways are here to stay, but is there plans in place to help relieve some of that division that they cause? Either by, there have been some proposals of converting them from highway exits to boulevards, and is that possible, or what kind of options do we have?
Great question. Who wants to jump in on that?
I don't have the big answer, but what I do have is I know that the city's Tropicana Field redevelopment plan talks about creating some pedestrian passovers to south over 175, so that's a step in the right direction. I know that one of the issues with 175 in particular is the hospitals, is that having Johns Hopkins in specific, when they built their new hospital, built it specifically to tie in so that there's easy access for ambulances. But your question's a good one. It's just bigger than mine.
Evan Witt, anything there? Cassandra?
I'd like to say that it would be great if we could peel those back. We have looked at it. There's the hospital issue. There's the ease of access to Tropicana Field, whether it be for a baseball stadium or other things. So there's not an easy answer for that one. I think everybody on the panel and probably most of the audience would like to do that, but it's very complicated. It's somewhat controversial, and there's a lot of opinions on both sides of it. If you just think about the hospital issue, if you put yourselves in the mindset of somebody that is running that hospital or somebody that's trying to get to that hospital, if you delay getting people to the hospital, people have told me if you do that, people are going to die. So it's hard to argue with that. But on the other hand, look at all the great land we would get back if we did that. So I hope I didn't give you a non-answer answer.
I think this is also a problem that with new technology, there may be solutions we don't even know of yet, right? Because as the technology changes, we haven't even talked about drones. We haven't talked about gondolas. We haven't talked about all kinds of options.
Next question.
Hi. I am new to St. Pete, but I grew up in Tampa Bay. I left Tampa Bay and moved to the big city and had my taste of life with robust public transportation system, with a vibrant city. And I've just moved back to the area. And I really love, part of why I chose to move back to St. Petersburg in particular is because of things like this. Because of the conversations that we're having here about future city. What do we want our city to look like? What infrastructure do we want? And it's not as easy as talking about the plans or the ideas. They require a lot of conversations, a lot of stakeholders are involved, a lot of decision making comes in, and oftentimes it's about money. And so it's not as easy as we want this or this is what we'd like to see happen with our area. And so what advice or what do you need from young people or even just citizens of this area to make that a reality? Because I would love to see something like that here, a robust public transportation with all the different technology innovations out there being integrated into this area. I am a public transportation user. My household is downsized to one vehicle, and I take my bike with my bus to work. That's something that I believe in, and so I practice what I preach. I tell my friends to do it. I want to see them use it. I want that to happen here in Pinellas County. So what can I do as a young person who's working and living here in this county to make something like this that you're talking about happen?
I'll try to answer that. We need to hear from you. Too many of the people who make decisions or listen to the voters aren't hearing your voice. They're not hearing your perspective. We are getting, and I think St. Pete has it a little bit easier because the population generally is a little bit younger in St. Pete. I think the politics in St. Pete are a lot more progressive than they are in other parts of the county. But we're getting tremendous pushback on converting some of our roadways from thoroughfares into complete streets. And, you know, the attitude I get a lot of times is, well, those bicyclists, they can ride on the sidewalk because that's where it's safe. They're going to die if they ride in the street, and that's just false. So we need to hear from you. That's one thing. You need to vote. That's another thing. You need to campaign for people who are about change. So much of Pinellas County is resistant to change, and I think demonstrating that there's a constituency out there, that there are people like you who want to live here, want to come back, want to go to college and then come back and invest in this community. And folks aren't hearing that, and we've been conditioned so much to cater to folks who are retiring to this county that we've kind of droned out that voice. So I would say get involved, get active, and pay attention to the politicians who are starting to speak about that. So I think we have a lot of opportunity to vote with our feet and really change the mindset in Pinellas.
So, guys, we've got about a couple minutes left, and I know that there's probably four or five questions left, and I'd like everybody to get their chance to ask. So I'm going to go quickly here with some fast, what do they call that? Like when you, lightning round. Thank you. Lightning round. Here we go.
The answer is yes.
It seems like there's two ways to look at this issue. There's getting people to where they need to go, and then there's planning so that people can be more in the city center. So I'm wondering how much you guys are working holistically with affordable housing to help keep young people, artists, and small businesses within the city versus getting pushed out and then needing to transport them in.
Well, I think that's an affordability issue, and it's an affordability from square footage of space. So we have streamlined our countywide process to make it easier for development to go through in the right place, in the right context. And we've created multimodal districts. We've created activity center districts where that can happen. So I think that's a big part of it. The Warehouse Arts District is another place in St. Petersburg where that, I think, can begin to take shape. But as I said earlier, you know, when you're spending that much money on housing and transportation, we've got a problem. So lowering the cost of entry to open a business and to have transportation options is a real key to that, and finding the right place to do it.
Next question.
I live in the Gateway area, and I spend the majority of my leisure time down here. Parking here, I'm more of a land use question. When I'm driving around trying to find a parking place, I see a whole bunch of empty parking lots that are available for businesses that are already closed. They close at 6. Is there a possibility to open some of those open-air parking lots to nighttime parkers? And what goes into the ROI between having a stacked garage versus open-air parking?
Evan, 1 minute, nail it.
All right, well, we are trying to activate more of the surface lots that are closed. The thing that I hate is seeing an empty lot, and I hate it even more when I see a tow truck pulling somebody out of there and knowing what pain that person's gonna go through to get their car back. We've had some success. We did talk the Holocaust Museum into opening, and we're trying to make sure some more of those surface lots are used for valet service because that can reduce the demand for on-street parking. And I have been in the parking business for a long time, and I can tell you that operating a surface lot is a lot cheaper than operating a garage, but in a downtown, you want to get rid of your surface lots because it's not a good land use, so you do want to go vertical, but you don't want to do a whole block of parking like we did before either. Like I said earlier, we're going to do public-private partnerships where we might buy a couple floors of parking, and then we want to incentivize other major development. We want to incentivize corporations to move here and job creation, and that's why the Transportation Parking Management Department at the city is under economic development arm rather than the public works arm.
Let me tell you, great questions by everybody. I mean, really fantastic questions. We're going to do one last question, and then we'll let everybody interact. If you can just stay around for a little bit, there's a couple of questions here that I wasn't able to get to. But the last question, bring us home.
Okay, please address the transit from downtown Clearwater to Clearwater Beach. There's something going on, and nobody seems to understand it. Some kind of a bus station being built?
I think, yes. So we have a master plan idea of how we are going to improve the transportation in downtown Clearwater. As part of that, we are building a new Clearwater Beach Transit Center right out on the beach. The problem that we've had in the past is not having a one-seat ride from other places in the county directly to the beach, and so that's the problem we're trying to solve. The other problem that we've been trying to solve is making sure that people understand a concentrated point where they can get almost any transportation service that we have out on the beach. And so this new transportation center will be able to hold about 3 buses. In the early summer, you'll see a canopy up in that area. We're trying to get our construction, our major construction and foundations finished before the start of spring break. And we've already talked to the contractor of making sure the maintenance of traffic is open during the weekends.
I've really enjoyed all the questions and all the answers. I could keep going forever on this, but let me turn it over to Steve to bring this home.
I have some good news. This conversation doesn't end here. In fact, it continues after we convene, but this is the mission and the value of open, what they bring. This is to start the conversation throughout the year at the different events or the different meetings that are held throughout the year. A big thank you to our moderator and panelists. A big thank you to you and the public coming to start this discussion for the year. And as a reminder, we'll take a short break and come back for our final session, Metathesis St. Pete, and our arrestee speaker, Michael Sturtz. This is not a session you want to miss. Take advantage of the food trucks, continue to mingle and ask questions, and see you in after a short break.
You've been listening to live event coverage on RadioSt.Pete.com from the Station House, an interactive session part of the 2017 Et Cultura Festival. Transportation transformation in the Sunshine City. This has been a live public affairs presentation of RadioSt.Pete.com. This is Joe Bordeaux speaking from the Station House in downtown St. Petersburg, returning you now to our studio.